It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Is that tight switch? Better late than never, I hope. This is the horn. Head On. Easy there. Headon.live is where we live. And the chat room is up and running. And folks are wandering around in it. And it is being capably moderated. And it's Titanic Tuesday. And wow. It is, for those of you who are wondering, who are not listening live, it's 6:31 p.m. and I was late to the microphone. Ay. Some days are diamonds and some days are rocks. And I'll never forget, you know, Charlie Brown and the Great Pumpkin looking down into his bag and saying, "I got a rock." Hi, I'm Charlie Brown. No, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And it is. It's Titanic Tuesday for the 20th day of March 2018. Oh, and I have a feeling we'll probably be busy this evening. Oh yes. I told you I got things going on that have me running around like the proverbial chicken with its head cut off. And that's pretty much where we are right now. And that's why the program is starting at 6:30 and not 6 o'clock. Hopefully things will just settle down and be as close to a setting on a dryer as they possibly can be, but they weren't this evening. So we will proceed from there. Thanks, of course, always go out at the beginning of the program. We send thanks to our subscribers, namely Bernice. Thank you, Bernice. Thank you very, very kindly for being a subscriber and helping keep the program running. And thanks very kindly to Carl. Thank you, Carl, in Ohio. And that's pretty much, well, and hey, wow, we've got a brand new subscriber and a brand new member of the Fraternity of David. Thank you, David, out at West Mesa. Thank you very kindly for jumping into that merry little band, the Happy Few, the happy not quite 100 on the way to fabulous 400. Someday. But that's a thank you very, that's a big thank you. And where do we stand right now? Yeah, fundraising for this evening, because we raised about $190 last night. Or no, because we had a deficit of about $190 last night. We are at $390 to raise for this Titanic Tuesday. $390, 10 at 39, or 39 people with $10, or one at 390, and the rest of the ciphering just makes my head hurt to even think about it, so we won't do that. And Just a gentle reminder that while HeadOnRadioNetwork.com remains down, having been hacked, the best place to go, the only place to go, to participate and help keep the program on the air is to go to HeadOn.live, 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 and scroll down, and you will find a... And there are lovely cover photographs there, I should note as well. HeadOn.live. Let's see. I just fired it up and got a gorgeous photograph of the New River Gorge Bridge in snow. But if you scroll just a few rolls, it'll bang. Donate with PayPal. There's a button right there. There's a there's a button going to Patreon, and that's how we keep the program on the air, because we don't have any ads for enticing people to buy gold now or get mattresses or, you know, Bose Wave radios or steel buildings or any such shit as that. We have instead a determined community who step in at the cost of, it's not even a cost, we're not selling anything. There's nothing for sale here, sorry. But for those who want to contribute to keep it on the air, it works out for a $10 a month subscriber to about 16 cents an hour. Less than 50 cents per program. Even a less than half as expensive as a 99-cent thing in the App Store. That's where we are. And for all that, you get the program 5 nights a week. Sometimes I'm even not late to the microphone, like almost all the time, except for tonight, damn it. But that's where we are. That's where we are. Just go to HeadOn.live, and if we can raise $390, then we will be even by the middle of the week and not have some sort of terrifying deficit, you know, for prayer meeting Wednesday, which this isn't. That's tomorrow. But all that having been said, thank you very kindly to Carol Baker for letting me know you're on. You're on TuneIn, too. Yes, the TuneIn stream picks up the White Rose Society stream. And as long as the White Rose Society stream works, everything else works as well. So where do we begin for this Titanic Tuesday? You know, Titanic Tuesday harkens back many, many years ago now. The name does. To an evening. No, it was a morning. A morning when our buddy Jim tuned into the local right-wing monotone, one of the greatest monotones ever to get behind a microphone, tuned him in only to hear him say, he took a caller, and the guy said, "Steve, how come is it that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I seen them down in the mines one time, and they was there just plain as day, but we ain't nowhere near the beach." To which the morning monotone, having taken a break from reading the newspapers to his mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging listeners, and sending them thereby into ditches and phone poles and the like, replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yeah, I know. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic high chair. No, not, none whatsoever. And so was born Titanic Tuesday, when we celebrate monumental Titanic manifestations of right-wing, white-wing intellect. And if we did not begin this here Titanic Tuesday with a celebration of Kris Kobach, the universe might come precisely to a halt. Oh gosh, Brother Deacon Asa, I'm sorry. Brother Deacon Asa says, let's say I want to rip out the carpeting and replace it with some really toxic faux wood floors. Do you have a Lumber Liquidators affiliate code I can use, Bob? Gosh, I'm sorry. No, because daggummit, there aren't any advertisements on the horn. None whatsoever. Golly, I'm sorry. You'll probably have to sleep on a bare dirt floor tonight in your house that isn't built of generally of steel. Gosh darn it for you. I hate that. But that's just how it is. No, Kris Kobach, attorney. Oh, this is good. Kris Kobach, attorney pro se, out in Kansas, Stan. After a lengthy trial brought by the ACLU, remember how much George W. Bush hated the ACLU, and commies out there defending the daggum, the daggum constitutional rights. Gol darn it. Well, Kris Kobach has been running a trial, which he's not very good at. Out in Kansas. I mentioned this a week or so back. It centers on his long-standing allegation that the new 90 states of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever in the universe under God, that the new 90 states of Merca is beset with an absolute crime wave of people trying to go and vote. You know, the much, much ballyhooed right-wing darling issue known as voter fraud. Of which, it turns out, as demonstrated in a court of law, there ain't none. It was back in 2016 when Judge Julie Robinson issued an order telling Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach to jump to it and restore voting rights for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of voters in Kansas, you know, citizens, whom he'd disenfranchised by requiring proof of citizenship in order to register to vote. And as Mother Jones reports, he found himself back in court, again, courtesy of the ACLU, and an 8-day trial that put that proof of citizenship test, proof of citizenship requirement, to the test. Yeah. And among other things, he hadn't done what Her Honor Judge Julie Robinson had told him to do, that is, restore the voting rights. So the ACLU was also seeking a contempt of court citation. Just as background, Kris Kobach, as Secretary of State, then decided that he himself would represent the Secretary of State's office instead of using real, live, honest-to-goodness, scary trial lawyers. in lecturing Chris Kobach, Judge Robinson said, when a judge begins a sentence with "I made it clear," and she's speaking to you, you are not having a good day. When the aforementioned judge begins to bang upon the desk behind which she sits upon a dais, your day gets worse. And thus it was that, pounding upon her desk, she looked at Chris Kobach and said, "I made it clear they're fully registered voters." This, then, was looking a bit little bighornish for Chris Kobach. As Silent R. Lamar points out, "Oh, come on, Judge, if we had a good message, we wouldn't have to keep people from voting." And therein lies Republican politics in a nutshell. If we were actually anything you want, you'd be happy to vote for us, and we wouldn't have to try to stop you. Because, see, since about 2010, when he ran for Secretary of State of Kansas, he's been hooting like a barn owl on meth about, quote, "The illegal registration of alien voters has become pervasive." And so in Kansas now, it requires something just short of intervention from Almighty God for some people to cast a vote. In Kansas, you have to show up with a birth certificate, a passport, or naturalization papers to register to vote. And 35,000 Kansans, were kept from registering to vote between 2013 and 2016. As Mother Jones points out, yes, this is the same Chris Kobach who ran the Election Integrity Commission for, the Carotene Caligula. He brought Kobach in to do that when he found out that he had and still has, and history will always say that he lost the election for president, that in fact, he's president of the United States, even though more people didn't vote for him than voted for, the other candidate. It was a mess. Simply a mess. And among other things, they had exposed the scientific methodology that they used for removing people from the voter rolls. Here it is. "Well, we got a list of voters, and you may think I'm kidding about this. I'm not. We got us a list of voters, and we started looking at all the names, and if that name sounded foreign to us, we figured it was probably an illegal voter." This stems back to a guy named Jesse Richman, a professor of political science from Old Dominion University. Who had, done a study for Kobach. And in this study, he said as many as 18,000 non-citizens were registered to vote in Kansas. And so when, among other things, when ACLU lawyer Dale Ho, sounds like a foreign sounding name, don't it? Why is he in this here courtroom? Why is that? Well, maybe she even. God almighty. Well, Dale Ho had Richmond on the stand and said, did illegal votes provide the margin for Hillary Clinton's victory, popular vote victory over Donald Trump? Jesse Richmond just looked at lawyer Ho and said, no. No. And so it was that Richmond's study became the basis for disenfranchising Kansans, those as many as 18,000 non-citizens. Okay? Here's the funny part. That study actually only cited 6 instances of non-citizens trying to register to vote. And so, under cross-examination, Professor Richmond said, well, hell, I don't know if they tried to, if they were successful when they tried to register or if they even tried to vote. This then led them down the path whereby they determined how it was people were shouldn't be trying to register to vote, and that is that people with foreign-sounding names were flagged. It was really, really bizarre. There were, among other things on the list, there were 5 people with the last name of Lopez. 2 people named Lopez were said to be sounding foreign. 3 Lopezes weren't. But then, in day 6 of the trial, came a moment that the goddess of irony had just been drumming her little fingers on the tabletop, waiting to arrive. Ho read a list of names, asking Professor Richmond which names sounded foreign. Lawyer Ho said, okay, I got one here. How about this name? Carlos Murguia. Professor Richmond, that's Murguia. Can you use it in a sentence? Carlos Murguia. And that's when Professor said, well, they're in the political science department of the Old Dominion University from which I come. We'd probably flag that as a foreign-sounding name. Yes. That's when Lawyer Ho said, well, that's mighty interesting there, Professor. Carlos Murguia is a federal judge in this very courthouse we're standing in here in Kansas City. Yes. Peals. I can imagine peals of laughter shaking the room, and the trial judge having to, again, bang on the table and say, now, stop that, as she herself reached beneath the desk to grab the glass of water to pretend to be taking a sip of while she cackled merrily to herself. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's funny. I mean, that's the sort of thing that you get on a an episode of Matlock. Carlos Murguia, does that sound foreign to you, Professor? Sure does. Well, let's go get appointed for life Article 3 United States Federal District Judge Carlos Murguia to come down here and test his citizenship. Why don't we? It was a complete disaster for Kris Kobach. Tabitha Lehman, Kris Kobach representing himself. Remember, he had a fool for a lawyer and an idiot for a client. Called to the stand Tabitha Lehman. She's the clerk of Sedgwick County, Kansas. And he had a spreadsheet. Well, that's true. I haven't gotten around to that quite yet. I was actually planning on it, but I'll give you pride of place, Silent R. Lamar. Sorry, Bob, but Kobach, the asshole, has a non-American-sounding kind of name. And that's absolutely true. And if you consider, you know, just exactly where they were, Kansas City, when you get right down to it, Kobach sounds like a foreign name. Smith sounds like a foreign name. Gutierrez sounds like a foreign name. John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt sounds like a foreign name. Windsor, Mountbatten sound like foreign names. Vitelli sounds like a foreign... Because they are. Any name that was not, you know, like... a Native American name was a foreign name because Kris Kobach, who probably does Pilates goose stepping in his bedroom every night to stay in shape, it has an ugly white wing, what is referred to in polite circles these days as white nationalist streak. If you're not white, why are you trying to vote? But anyway, Tabitha Lehman, she looked over a spreadsheet. And that spreadsheet said that 38 non-citizens in Sedgwick County alone had registered or tried to register to vote. And that's where we got the... That's where it got funny again. As the ACLU counsel pressed in on poor little Tabitha Lehman, she said, well, only five of those people, those 38 people on that spreadsheet have voted in the last... 20 years? That's five votes out of how many votes cast, ma'am?
1.3 million?
In closing arguments, this led Lawyer Ho to note that Kris Kobach says that he's uncovered the tip of the iceberg in a voter fraud in Kansas. Lawyer Ho, barely concealing, let us just call it mirth, said, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the iceberg on close inspection, Your Honor, the iceberg is,
that's more of an ice cube.
And bless Lawyer Ho's heart for not going for the easy laugh and saying, it looks more like it's not really so much an ice cube, Your Honor, as a. If my intern there will get out the snare drum real quick, please. It's not so much an ice cube as a snowflake! By the way, in case there are any little lurking little right-wingers out there or anything, saying, well, yeah, that's what you get when you get one of them goddamn liberal elitist activist judges. Judge Julie Robinson has been on the federal bench in Kansas City there, the Federal District Court of Kansas, since 2001. She was appointed by George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully this is a beat down, okay? Chris Kobach got whipped in court the way Clemson just stomped the bejesus out of Auburn the other night in the second round of the NCAA tournament. Or, if I may be a bit of a homer here, the way that my beloved West Virginia Mountaineers just kicked the shit out of Marshall. You know, 20 points plus going away. Wasn't even close. I mean, the only thing that made it close is that there were two separate sides in the courtroom. But it was a major league team in the ACLU up against a peewee team in the form of Chris Kobach. And if there's any justice to be had at all, and this is the best part, Chris Kobach wanted to use the courtroom drama to advance his campaign for governor of Kansas. He already had it all set out in his head, you see. There were going to be ads of him standing up and holding up papers in the courtroom, defending the voting rights of honest, decent, God-fearing, upstanding white Kansans. Only it didn't quite play that way. And instead, he's kind of what you might call humiliated at the moment. So maybe, I mean, it's not like he's going to give up and go away. But this was a definite blow to the idea. And of course, you know, facts don't matter worth a tinker's damn to people like Geezer Disgustus. It's not just a blow to the career of Chris Kobach. It's a blow to the fantastic notion that Donald Trump was actually received millions and millions more votes than crooked Hillary did. Millions and millions, believe me. Because of course, and we don't not to put too fine a point on it, he didn't, and remains a despised president. Mm-hmm. That just seemed so epically titanic that it was absolutely irresistible for kicking off Titanic Tuesday. I mean, it takes some titanic intellect to march into court with every bit of five names and claim that they are representative of a massive wave of attempted voter fraud over the last 20 years. Yeah, no kidding. And meanwhile, out in the everyday world, looks like some maybe some climate change got loose in Alabama over the last night or so. I watch the news from down there when it comes tornado season, just because, you know, that's the old home dirt. And a tornado of such force touched down in, I think it was Calhoun County, Alabama. Kind of wonder why that state's still got a county name. But then again, so does West Virginia, so do other states. Maybe it's time to rethink the naming of anything for South Carolina's John C. Calhoun. Maybe tornadoes will stop touching down and ripping the roof off of the entire arena of Jacksonville State University. You know, just it, taking the name off Calhoun County, it beats the devil out of having to throw a virgin into the vortex or anything. Yeah, right? But, no, and just rip the living daylights out of Ardmore, Alabama. It's a mess. But, well, we've always had tornadoes down there in Tornado Alley, and golly Moses, that's no proof of climate change or anything like that. Of course not. And up to Kentucky for a minute. And a candidate for elected office in that Commonwealth. You'll recall that Chris Kobach is Secretary of State of the state of Kansas. Well, they got him a Republican candidate for Secretary of State in Kentucky stand, too. His name is Carl Nett. And he is, you know, he's a titanic Republican. Good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican. If you were to find him on Twitter, you'll find that he identifies himself as GOP candidate for Kentucky Secretary of State, former U.S. Secret Service and CIA officer, doer of stuff, making America great since 1975. Oh, why, he sounds like a delightful fellow, doesn't he? Well, in an attempt to get some publicity, which I guess we're giving him here, but this isn't for purposes of lauding him, or no. This is by way of issuing a warning to decent people. Carl Nett got on the Twitter to manifest his displeasure with a congressional hero of mine. You know, the other night I mentioned the passing of Representative Louise Slaughter of New York, and how dear she was to those of us who are engaged in the struggle for human rights and human dignity in the Mountaintop Removal Sacrifice Zone. Well, the principal sponsor of the AIC Act, which Louise Slaughter so eagerly co-sponsored and stood up for, the principal sponsor of the AIC Act is Representative John Yarmuth of Kentucky. He basically represents Louisville in the Congress. And he got on Twitter, John Yarmuth did, and he posted a pair of photographs. One is just sort of a picture of him, and he's got his Member of Congress button, and underneath that he's got a white button with a red F. No, it doesn't stand for F you Trump. Although it sort of could under these circumstances. So he posted a close-up photo of his congressional button with the F under it. And he said, I'm so proud of my NRA rating. He's got an F from the NRA, you see, because he doesn't take bags and bags and bags of money from the NRA. And in fact, he doesn't have any problems whatsoever standing up against America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization. Copyright Bob Kincaid. Probably ought to trademark that, too. I'm so proud of my NRA rating, I'll wear it on my chest. I invite my colleagues to join me in wearing our F ratings every day until the GOP finally stands up to the gun lobby and helps us pass common-sense gun safety legislation. Find me to get a pin. Hashtag March for Our Lives. Because the March for Our Lives is coming up on Saturday, and not a moment too soon, because, of course, there was another school shooting today. The NRA roulette wheel of death landed on a tiny community in suburban Maryland, where two students were wounded and the shooter student was killed by law enforcement. One of those two students was critically wounded. I haven't seen an update as to her condition. But John Yarmuth is going after the NRA. And he's apparently he's got a big bag of little white buttons with an F on them. And so it was that Carl B. Nett, candidate for governor, secretary of state, saw it and quoted John Yarmuth's tweet with the following words. Move it over just a bit. I was trained center mass. See, that's one of those terms gun humpers love to use. What you got to do is you got to shoot them center mass, and that way you know you can get all the vital organs and just bust them all to hell, and they'll bleed out inside their own chests, and it'll get out and leak all over the ground and the sidewalk and protect freedom. You got to shoot center mass. In other words, Carl B. Nett, Republican candidate for Secretary of State of Kentucky, Stan, stated in a publicly published tweet that he desires to assassinate a sitting member of the House of Representatives of the United States Congress. He wants John Yarmuth to move his pin over to the center of his chest, like maybe use it as a tie tack, so that he, Carl B. Nett, can use it as a target and more effectively murder Representative John Yarmuth with a firearm. Now, the trouble is, this is Kentucky, Stan, and in the rest of the Commonwealth there, that which was referred to by a Cherokee leader many, many years ago as a dark and bloody ground. Well, Carl B. Nett wants to make it a little bit bloodier, you know, with the blood of a member of the House of Representatives. Now, understand, of course, if that had been some black dude, the law enforcement authorities would have probably sent the SWAT team to his door and very likely shot him center mass by now. But there are no stories about a SWAT team showing up outside the home of notoriously white Republican Secretary of State of Kentucky candidate Carl B. Nett? Of course not. Why, that there is what you call political satire. Har, 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 har. Yeah, what's an assassination threat among friends now, huh? But this is where we are. I read an article last night from a couple of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas students who said that they are basically being threatened by the NRA every time they speak up and every time they attempt to exercise their constitutional rights. Anybody have any problem believing that? Because I don't.
I was trained center mass.
It, meanwhile, the National Ruble, I mean Rifle Association, is having a hissy because they got a gun stiffy over the fact that a cop killed the shooter in Maryland today. And poor Dana Lush, for whom it is apparently always each and every second of each and every day, 5 o'clock somewhere. Well, Dana Lush ran out to the Twitter machine and said that ain't none of the liberal media talking about it was a hero cop with a gun what took him down the shooter in the Maryland today. Talking about Great Mills High School in St. Mary's County, Maryland. Dana Lush said,
"We won't see any stories on CNN, on MSNBC, on any of those talking head circuits about this hero, this armed resource officer who did the opposite of what Scott Peterson did, what Broward Sheriff did, what Robert Runces did."
Jake Tapper at CNN then immediately just tweeted the word false. The cop who shot the shooter, it was actually reported by CNN. The school resource officer by the name of Blaine Gaskell. Shot down the young person and ended the attack before it could get any worse than it already was.
But Dana Lush
is oblivious to the fact that, well, the school resource officer had him a freedom protector and everything, but it didn't stop two students from getting shot and, well, in the hopes of the shooter, killed. Thus far, merely is a bad word for this, wounded. 'Cause see, that's the problem with ambushes, as we've noted before. For instance, if Carl B. Nett there in Kentucky stand was a wanting to take a shot at Representative John Yarmuth, he would get the first shot because they're not lining up in an oak grove somewhere on the plains of Weehawken or in the dusty streets of Old Tombstone or Dodge City, or even the streets of Matewan, West Virginia, if you want to shoot out. There's no whistling and no Clint Eastwood music
And no, nobody seen draw.
No. The shooter simply decides when, where, and whom to start shooting, thereby guaranteeing that it is almost 100% likely that someone will get shot. And so the school resource officer can't do anything but return fire once the firing has begun. Well, thank you very kindly, Carol Baker. That's one of the best Foster Brooks impersonations I've ever heard. I've been working on it since I was about 10. I had to wait for my voice to change. It wasn't real cute before then. But I think Dana's in the bag about 99% of the time, because you can't say the shit she says sober. No. But, okay, hero cop. Yes. Yes. But there are other measures that we can take that don't involve guns that might actually stop more shootings. So, that. Yeah, we've got many, many Titanic intellects this evening. Here's one from close to home. Might be worth watching. We are about, maybe 2 days short of being 2 weeks out, or 2 months out, 2 months out from the West Virginia primary. And it's shaping, there are some various primaries out there. But the one to watch is not the silly primary against Joe Manchin. No. I mean, if you just, unless you're, up for high comedy. No, the one to watch is the West Virginia Republican primary for the right to challenge Joe Manchin. There are essentially three significant candidates for that slot on the ballot. They are Representative Evan Jenkins, who is nominally my member of Congress. I would not vote for Evan Jenkins were he the last candidate on the last ballot of the last election. He is a POS. Then there's West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, who, with yesterday's announcement by Tangerine Tiberius that he intends to have drug pushers killed, has got to be feeling a little bit nervous, because that would if Donald Trump kills off all the drug pushers, there's not going to be anybody left to give money to Patrick Morrissey. Because, of course, he's up to his eyeballs in the opioid crisis with a long-standing relationship with some of the companies that, poured like a mighty river of filth and anguish and harm and pain and death, opioids into this state. And then there's Don Blankenship. Don got out of prison recently, fairly recently, and decided that he wanted to be a member of the new 90 States Senate. And he'd be a, he thinks he'd be a good one, because he's already proven himself a criminal. That means that he is absolutely well-suited to being a member of the Republican Senatorial Caucus. And so he's spending a horse-gagging wad of money buying radio and TV ads and trying to see and be seen. I mean, there at the second round action against Marshall, because after all, Don Blankenship is a proud son of Marshall University. He could be seen in the stands taking in the hoops action, as was West Virginia Governor Jim Kunta Kinte Justice. One can only assume that Don Blankenship had to get permission from his probation officer to go and attend the basketball match. Apparently, probation rules have become rather lax in recent years, or at least are lax if you're a millionaire former coal boss. So there he sat, Don Blankenship, and they, and he showed up on camera. You remember Don, don't you? Don Blankenship, who was the, as the head of Massey Energy, presided over a country, or a company rather, presided over a company that it poured countless, God knows how many millions, billions, trillions of fine, ultra-fine particulate poison down on the various hollers and homes of West Virginians, and we now know as an exercise in science that dust is toxic and leads to things like birth defects and heart disease and lung disease and cancer and, you know, death. We know now that somewhere north of a 1,000 people die every year in West Virginia's counties once you factor out all the bad habits and bad luck and bad things that people do, the liquor and the gravy and the smoking and the rubbing of the snuff and the rubbing on each other and whatnot. The only thing left is mountaintop removal for a cause, you know, that goddamn dust. For, you know, the cause of death. They're called statistical excess deaths. They're people who would have died but for, wouldn't have died but for, you know, the presence of coal. Well, Don Blankenship ran Massey Energy and managed to get people killed because he was obsessive about making money. If you ain't moving coal, you ain't working. The time you spend on safety isn't moving coal, and it's not making money for the company, and it ain't doing us no good, and what in the hell are we paying you for? Or something to that effect. A man who once threatened a camera crew for ABC News, a man who once threw his breakfast at his maid because she brought back the wrong breakfast from Mickey D's. That Don Blankenship. The Don Blankenship who was charged with a felony for cheating Massey's investors out of money by causing the value of the stock to drop by, you know, fudging around with safety regulations that. Yeah, that was the felony. He was also charged with a misdemeanor for dummying up safety regulations so that 29 human beings got incinerated at the Upper Big Branch mine some 8 years or so ago. So they were so badly incinerated that their forms were not recognizable as ever having been human, and it made it very, very difficult to figure out, you know, who was actually people. It 29 people. Yeah. That Don Blankenship, because screwing with safety regs so that 29 people get incinerated, well, that's not a felony under the federal law. That's just a misdemeanor. Right. And as Brother Deacon Asa points out, if a convicted criminal can't vote, why can a convicted criminal even get on the ballot? I'm thoroughly confused. Well, like I said, Brother Deacon Asa, you can be, it was just, getting 29 men incinerated was just a misdemeanor. And so having been convicted of a misdemeanor, he gets to continue the right to vote. And he gets to run for Senate if he's got enough money. And so he is. And Donnie has mucked around in West Virginia Republican politics for a while. It was a lot of years ago during the 2004 elections that he pumped a bunch of money into the campaign of one Brent Benjamin under the guise of a charity called And for the Sake of the Kids. His goal was to get Brent Benjamin on the Supreme Court of Appeals of the state of West Virginia and to oust an incumbent justice there by the name of Warren McGraw, because Warren McGraw had once participated in a decision in which a young man who had been sexually abused to hell and back as a child became a sexual abuser himself, and the air was full of ads on all about how Warren McGraw put a child rapist back on the streets. We can't have this. This ain't our West Virginia values. Utterly oblivious to the fact that the young man was being given a second chance because he was a young man and because it was an exercise, an attempt at mercy. Well, the ploy worked. And so, at the same time that his coal company was poisoning God only knows how many children, for the sake of the kids, he got Brent Benjamin onto the Supreme Court of the state of West Virginia just in time to have a case heard with millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars at stake, you know, of Massey Energies. In a case brought by another minor coal baron. Yeah, it was so bad that that the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, and particularly Brent Benjamin, got their hands smacked by the Supreme Court of the United States for such underhanded, dirty tactics. Among other things, Don Blankenship was later seen and photographed swanning around the French Riviera with a member of the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, a guy by the name of Spike Maynard. Yes, here in West Virginia, we sometimes elect judges named Spike. That Don Blankenship. And so now, fast forward to the present day, this 20th day of March 2018, and we find Don Blankenship running for all he's worth to be the Republican nominee for the United States Senate seat presently held by Joe Manchin. There are not many people who could make me eager to go to the polls and vote for Joe Manchin. Don Blankenship is that guy. despite his many faults and the fact that that Joe Manchin is so far from being ideologically pure that the light from ideologically pure will not reach him before the universe itself freezes. It would be a pretty easy choice. And of course, if lightning should strike and Joe Manchin should actually be defeated by the candidate from the what are they called, the Justice Democrats, by the candidate from the Justice Democrats who is being paid to run for office. Well, Don, with all of his money, would quickly dispatch her, or would defeat her with real dispatch. This then presents a conundrum for the Republican Party. In a year that has seen them, or in the last few months having seen them as conundrumed up to their eyebrows. Do they do what they did with Roy Tolamore and say, "Oh, screw it. At least he's a Republican. I mean, so what if he wants to get it on with Santa's little helper and trolled little girls around the mall there in Gadsden? I mean, it was a long time ago, and God bless him, he's a Christian. Let's all get behind Roy Tolamore." Well, if Don Blankenship is the nominee, the Republican Party is facing something similar. It all was borne out in a Politico article from earlier today. The headline reads, "GOP fears another potential electoral disaster. The national GOP is flummoxed," good word, flummoxed, "over what to do about the surging candidacy of coal baron and ex-con Don Blankenship." Alex Eisenstadt wrote the article. And it's all about how the Republican Party is positively beside itself trying to figure out what to do about Don Blankenship. Alex Eisenstadt writes, "With Blankenship skyrocketing in the West Virginia Republican Senate primary and blanketing the airwaves with ads assailing his fractured field of rivals as career politicians, senior party officials are wrestling with how or even whether to intervene." How or whether? Well, for the moment, they've got, well, then maybe they don't. They can say to themselves, "Well, damn it. It's a primary, and by the rules, we ain't supposed to take no sides. So we just won't take no sides." And that way, we won't have to worry about being accused of trying to rig the election. Or do they jump in? Because because the risk is too great. You see the problem? Because if it turns out that Don Blankenship wins the primary, then they're going to be in the position of having to support him. And look it, if the Republican Party can support an accused child molester, then they're not going to have a problem supporting somebody who all he ever did was to get29 workers burnt alive. Alex Eisenstadt writes, many of them are convinced that Blankenship, who served a one-year sentence after the deadly 2010 explosion at his Upper Big Branch mine, would be a surefire loser against Democratic Senator Joe Manchin and potentially become a national stain for the party. Ooh, if you're Don Blankenship, that had to sting, being called a stain. Shit stain, blood stain, charcoal stain, grease stain. What kind of stain? And see, here's the fun part. As it stands, Blankenship, Jenkins, and Morrissey are in pretty much a three-way tie. Which in itself makes for an interesting commentary on, the West Virginia Republican voter. Blankenship, and I was on, one night I was on All In with Chris Hayes, opposite him. Blankenship is, and has been, running around saying, "Oh, I can kill nobody. I was just running a coal mine. That's all. I was just running a coal mine. I can kill nobody. You know what? That Obama and his war on coal EPA, they set me up." And therein lies the rub. Because blaming that one in our White House still plays real, real good with a segment of the population in this state that is still suffering from economic anxiety. And therefore, we all understand that economic anxiety is how the delicate for-profit media refers to racists and skinheads and neo-Nazis and Klansmen and sympathizers with all that. Politico interviewed Blankenship, and he said he thought it'd be a good thing if the Republican Party'd come after him. "I think it'd get me votes if they did. I think the Republicans in West Virginia are not really happy with Republicans in the Senate and the House in general." He's betting on Republicans in West Virginia not being, shitty enough. I wish I was kidding. I think Republicans in West Virginia, think the Republicans in Washington have been way too soft. Way too soft. On things like Social Security. We're West Virginians. We're tough. We lift ourselves up by our own bootstraps. We don't need none of that damn stupid Social Security or that Medicaid or that Medicare. You know the sad thing? Don Blankenship may just be right. Yeah. Republicans in West Virginia may just be that shitty. Remember, this is a very, very, very white state. And taking Alabama as an example, 63% of white evangelical women and 72% of white evangelical men ran, not walked, to the polls to vote for Roy Tola Moore. I'd bet you that number will be even higher in the Republican primary here. The only time Evan Jenkins ever shows up at a church is if he can have a photo op there. Patrick Morrissey tries not to get down and wallow with the hoi polloi a lot. You know, he's from New Jersey to begin with or somewhere like that, and he's not real comfortable with the whole snake handling, rolling on the floor, speaking in tongues, drinking strychnine, oil anointing crowd in the first place. You can see how that would be a problem. And among other things, Blankenship is going to whoop on chinless Mitch McConnell a little bit down there in Kentucky stand, across the Tug Fork River in the Big Sandy. Because, wait for it, you might want to get the hockey puck for this. Don Blankenship says that Mitch McConnell hasn't been very good for coal. And among other things, he says that he'll be a bosom ally of President Trump. That him and Trump are absolutely simpatico. No, I wish I was kidding. I'm not. Not even. And again, even though it appears, according to recent polling, that West Virginia may no longer be the Trumpiest place in the world, it's still pretty Trumpy. Alabama has replaced us. And he's running hard. Don Blankenship is. He says that Evan Jenkins, well, he ain't taking no bold stand about climate change. There ain't no such thing as climate change. If climate change is real, why ain't the United States a bombing of China to make China quit burning all the coal what they burn? Okay, he's not calling for us to bomb China. I did that part. But he does say that kind of shit. Well, it's China's fault. Well, you sold the coal to China, you stupid son of a bitch. Okay, bad word. You stupid bastard. You silly prick. And yes, he says that Joe Manchin engaged in a conspiracy to put him in prison. Deep state, deep state. So that's kind of the filibobster. Like I said, I'm sorry I got a late start this evening, but I hope I've made up for it to a certain extent. It's about 10 minutes before the final hour of the program. We started with the we started with $390 needing to be raised. And remember, if we finish fundraising even this week, then all next week, thanks to our subscribers, all next week is fundraising free radio. But we got to finish fundraising first. And at $390 to go, well, on a Tuesday, yeah, it's a little rough. Oh, yes, that name does ring a bell, Glenn. Yeah. Floyd Stiles. That's a long time ago. But it's a new world in a new West Virginia where people who got 29 people incinerated can run for Senate from the Senate of the United States, and nobody goes, "Hey, wait a minute." Well, okay, some of us do, just not nearly enough. Anyway, hopefully we'll take a bite out of fundraising this evening. Remember, you can go on over to headon.live, and you can click the little PayPal link and take a bite out of this $390 hole. You know, we take it down $5, $10 at a time. That'd be awesome. And we've only got three subscribers for this particular evening. One of them's brand new. I'm sure Dave would be mighty happy if you jumped in alongside him and became a subscriber this evening. The little checkbox is right there in the PayPal interface. But this broadcast is a lot more fun to do when we're not sweating the bills. We always sweat the bills, but when we're not, it just, you know, Jesus, really? $390? And then tomorrow, $590, and Thursday, $790, and Friday, $990? Yeah, that's a little creepy. So if we could keep it from being that, hell, if we could knock down last night's $190, that'd be a big start. So we'll take a break, see if there's anything on your mind. Feel free to jump in, converse, engage in a little chat. 304-574-8178 is the number. If you need us to pay the freight, we'll do it. We've got a toll-free number, 844-THE-HORN, 844-THEHORN, 844-843-4676. That gets you into the program. And, of course, from Skype to Skype, from anywhere on planet Earth, that'll let you do it, mind you, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, and that'll get you into the program. So we're going to take a little break. It is Tuesday. That means we have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And going out, one of those peons that made guns so popular back in the day. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. You paying attention, Carl Nett? No,
to
don't.
To the town of Alfrey, who rode a stranger one fine day. Hardly spoke to folks around him, didn't have too much to say. No one dared to ask his business, no one dared to make a slip. The stranger there among them had a big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. It was early in the morning when he rode into the town. He came riding from the south side, slowly looking all around. He's an outlaw loose and running, came the whisper from each lip. And he's here to do some business with a big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
Probably about a two iron.
In this town there lived an outlaw by the name of Texas Red. Many men had tried to take him, and that many men were dead. He was vicious and a killer, though a youth of 24. And the notches on his pistol numbered 1 and 19 more.
one in 19 more. Now the stranger started talking, made it plain to folks around. Was an Arizona Ranger, wouldn't be too long in town. He came here to take an outlaw back alive or maybe dead. And he said it didn't matter, he was after Texas Red. After Texas Red. Wasn't long before the story was relayed to Texas Red. But the outlaw didn't worry, men that tried before were dead. 20 men had tried to take him, 20 men had made a slip. 21 would be the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
Might have been a driving iron.
The morning passed so quickly, it was time for them to meet. It was 20 past 11 when they walked out in the street. Folks were watching from the windows, everybody held their breath. They knew this handsome ranger was about to meet his death. About to meet his death. There was 40 feet between them when they stopped to make their play. And the swiftness of the ranger is still talked about today. Texas Red had not cleared leather or a bullet fairly ripped. And the ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
Of course, if your short game's really good, a pitching wedge can be
It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron, when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
Maybe a sand wedge? A mashie? A niblick?
It's Tuesday, March 20, 2018.
Inside the Trump administration's newly unveiled sanctions against Russia is a startling accusation.
FBI warns Russian hackers attacked the U.S. power grid and critical infrastructure systems. As storms get stronger, building codes are getting weaker. FEMA's flood maps dramatically understate flood risk for 41 million Americans. Plus, Trump's FEMA has deleted all mention of climate change from their strategic plans.
Because if you don't mention it often enough, it doesn't exist. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Because whether it be fossil fuels or calling the president a moron, we know Rex Tillerson likes it crude.
Well, he used to. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, the good news? Winter is now officially over.
Yes, that's good.
But not the extreme winter weather. A tornado tore through Jacksonville, Alabama on Monday night, causing what is being described as significant damage. Unclear on the full amount of damage or the injury toll at this hour, but reports suggest there have been much of both. Meanwhile, as the Southeast gets pummeled, the Northeast is battening down its hatches yet again for another, its fourth nor'easter of the season. And meteorologists are predicting a fifth one for this weekend. So,
wow.
Yeah, you know, when they had two in a row, you and I both agreed, back-to-back nor'easters, not that unheard of. But back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back, Maybe we got a real problem here.
Yeah, the frequency of these storms is really what officials should be paying attention to, because it hasn't given communities much time to recover or to restore their electricity. And as if to underscore the importance of being prepared for climate impacts, a new study released on Monday from the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety concludes that states are ignoring warnings from the insurance industry and federal scientists and are failing to upgrade their building codes to withstand the higher risk of extreme weather events. Bloomberg News reports that despite the increasing severity and cost of natural disasters, real estate developers are succeeding in lobbying state legislatures to relax building codes and regulations. That's with help from local officials who are seeking to increase home sales that also increase property tax revenue, even though the trend leaves residents more vulnerable to climate impacts.
Get money the hell out of politics, and so many of our problems are immediately solved.
On top of that, another new report concludes that FEMA's flood maps that identify flood-prone areas in the U.S. are actually wildly outdated and dramatically understate the actual flood risk.
Fantastic.
University of Bristol researchers working with the Environmental Protection Agency and other organizations estimate that 41 million Americans are at high risk of 100-year floods. That's three times more people than the current estimates. That means that many homeowners are likely underinsured against floods right now. The researchers say the process of drawing FEMA's patchwork of flood maps is extremely long and extremely complicated, and it uses past data, not forward-looking data, and it relies in part on local input that can be influenced by political considerations. For example, Florida alone has about $700 billion worth of real estate located in those 100-year floodplains. As global warming intensifies the severity of extreme weather events, President Trump's FEMA, which is responsible for dealing with the aftermath of disasters like hurricanes and floods, has removed all mention of climate change from its four-year strategic plan. That's despite the fact that increased hurricanes, flooding, heat waves, wildfires, drought, and sea level rise are all scientifically linked to climate change. In the document, FEMA actually admits that, quote, disaster costs are expected to continue to increase due to rising natural hazard risk, but it doesn't say what might be causing those risks to rise.
Who knows?
It's a huge shift from the Obama administration FEMA, which in its long-term disaster plans repeatedly focused on the need to incorporate and prepare for increased climate risks. Finally, officials with the Department of Homeland Security and Federal Bureau of Investigation last Thursday accused Russian hackers of infiltrating crucial infrastructure systems like energy and water in both the U.S. and Europe. The report is the first time the Trump administration has officially named Russia as the source of the hack attacks and alleges that starting in 2016, hackers linked to Russian intelligence agencies targeted and in some cases successfully infiltrated computers that control U.S. nuclear power plants, electric plants, water, and aviation systems. The DHS report says that the hackers did not go so far as to sabotage or shut off any power plants, but that they could have, at will.
Things are going very, very well, aren't they?
They sure are.
For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's getting better all the time.
The unbridled optimism of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. 3 minutes past the hour here on this Titanic Tuesday. I told you we had a lot of Titanic intellect. And it's, you know, it's on display. Yeah, I couldn't resist the Marty Robbins bumper there. Just because the whole story that I mentioned in the first portion of the program with Carl Nett, or you know how they'll give somebody with a nickname that goes between their first name and their last name. For instance, Carl, catch him with a butterfly net. Yeah, It really is. It really is disturbing to see a guy who used to be a member of the of law enforcement and he got busted for the move it over just a bit. I was trained center mass threat to assassinate John Yarmuth. And so, naturally, he deleted his tweet and immediately said, "Friends, I protected Barack Obama, John Curry, John Edwards, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, and Bill Clinton. I voted for none of them. I would have died for any of them. My oath is to the Constitution. All politicians should keep that oath first and foremost." John Yarmuth is not keeping his oath to the Constitution, dumbass. Of course, the other problem is that Carl B. Nett is also a liar. In December 2016, he said that he had, in a tweet, he said that he had bailed out after he was detailed to protect President Obama a few times. Mm-hmm. He tweeted, "I'm not a bullet sponge for just anybody." As in, "I ain't gonna take a bullet for no Negro." And he's a big fan of giving guns to teachers. And he proudly notes that, "I carry a gun everywhere I go. I even take my gun to church." It was April 2nd, 2017, when Kentucky Secretary of State candidate Carl B. Nett said, "My wife, why do you insist on carrying a gun to church? Me, add this to the list of reasons." And then he tweeted a story from that horrible, horrible, horrible human being, Pam Geller. "Detroit Muslim threatened to attack church." And, of course, again, it's Pamela Geller who has all the credibility of, all the credibility of carnival barker. Let's just be gentle that way. This guy's a real Lulu. He's trying to hide, but he's a Lulu, and he threatened the life of a sitting member of Congress. After the State of the Union, just a couple of months back, January 30th, he tweeted, he was talking about the various responses by the so-called left to the geezer Discustus's State of the Union. "One response, six response, 10 responses. They all hate America." I also tweeted photographs of African-American law enforcement officers killed in line of duty. And he said, "Well, these black lives mattered." But yes, in point of fact, the dime did get dropped on Carl B. Nett. Carl, catch him with a butterfly, Nett. "Capitol Police have directed officers to be diligent in reporting all threats to members' safety. They are aware of this situation. FBI Louisville is aware of the tweet and is working with our law enforcement partners to determine the best course of action." I bet they wouldn't have to work with law enforcement officers to figure out the best course of action if it was a black feller what had issued that tweet. They'd have been inside his house before the tweet was an hour old. Spokescreep for the Kentucky GOP, T-R-E-S, Watson, said, "The tweet was inappropriate. We condemn any suggestion of violence against public servants, even if in jest." In other words, he was just kidding about assassinating a sitting member of Congress. It was in jest. Michael Adams is also a candidate for Kentucky Secretary of State in the Kentucky primary, and he said, "Well, that tweet was not only morally wrong, but embarrassing for the Republican Party in Kentucky." Embarrassing. That was morally wrong. How about legally wrong? Is it legal? Is it illegal to suggest that you want to shoot a sitting member of the U.S. House of Representatives? I don't know. But somehow I'm guessing that it probably is. And of course, moving into the fetid swamplands of the House of the White House. The White House finally got around to mentioning the bombings taking place in and around Austin, Texas. But, of course, screwed this up, too. Because they're working closely with Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbag said, we're working closely with law enforcement. We'll do anything do anything that's necessary. Only not so much. Because, among other things, and this is kind of interesting, isn't it? A reference was made by law enforcement authorities in Austin to the person doing these heinous acts as, "What we have here is a serial bomber." No, a serial bomber is somebody who puts firecrackers in Lucky Charms. But interestingly, the one word that they can't bring themselves to use yet is, you know this, come on, wait for it, terrorist. They can't refer to the Austin bomber as a terrorist. And you know why, of course. We haven't found out whether or not the Austin bomber is brown or a Muslim. Now, if one of these things goes off and somebody finds a shred of paper with Aloha Snack Bar written on it, well, then we'll know we're dealing with terrorism. But it might just be, some of those good people, like what Donald Trump said were in Charlottesville. You know, the good Nazis. It's just a serial bomber. If he's a white guy, never mind the number of people he's already killed and maimed. Yeah, a note coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. Embarrassing, referring to Carl catching with a butterfly net. No, I'd say not. It's embarrassing they got caught being turds. Beyond that, they don't give a rat's ass. This is the party of the online bully-in-chief. Although, thank God, melanoma is a-speaking against the cyber-bullying. You know, that's true, and I would be mighty wary. See, most people don't know about the existence of the goddess of irony. They think the universe is run by some big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, running around smiting people. like the Christian assholes who said that Stephen Hawking was punished by God by being killed at age 72 by ALS. Never mind the fact that if that God really wanted to prove his reality, what he would have done is healed Stephen Hawking and, you know, turned on the reverb and said, "Stephen, Stephen, why won't you believe in me, Stephen? Here, I am the God of love. And even if you don't believe in me, I love you. So be healed, Stephen Hawking. Arise, walk, speak. Thou art whole again." And you know what? If that had happened, Stephen Hawking would have gotten up out of that chair, and with his own voice, not the voice of a machine, he would have said, "God's real, y'all. I was wrong." Eh, but, oh, well, can't quite reach that, no. Stephen, New York, again, pointing out, "Oh, dear, dear, Bob. Oh, that, now that's a creative way around Ron and Raleigh's gimmick, I gotta say. Wait a minute. That's a, oh, that's very good. White people aren't cereal bombers. They're more like oatmeal or cream of wheat bombers. Oh. Yeah, that's a long cream of wheat bombers." Mm-hmm. But that would mean they can't be gluten-free, wouldn't it? I mean, it's wheat. So, yeah, I mean, another bomb today, and the cereal bomber is getting creative. He's gone, he, you know, because it's kind of got to be a he. Say what you will, girls don't do a lot of this, women. He's moved from merely sending package bombs to setting bombs with tripwires, and this one, this latest one, went off inside a FedEx facility. It reckon maybe it's a disgruntled FedEx employee? You want to watch the new 90 states of America lose its collective mind? What was it that Geezer Disgustus said during the campaign about immigration? We need to shut all of this down until we figure out what's going on. What if shipping companies had to be shut down until we figured out what's going on? You'd probably find out pretty quick what the rest of America thinks about a serial bomber, instead of sitting around going, "Oh, serial bomber, oh, Muslims, ISIS." Right-wingers would have an absolute hissy. "Wait a minute, you mean my gun ain't going to be delivered this week? I paid extra for one day shipping." Regarding Stephen Hawking, Stephen, New York, says, "You done got it all wrong, Bob. It were a demon that done kept him alive until God's preacher, Billy Graham, done got caught home. And so it was a one and one." Merciful sakes. Yeah, I. Oh, and you know, of course, they had their little they had their silly little sham election there in Russia, and we talked about it a little bit. Well, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags was fielding questions today there in the White House press briefing room. And she got a question. I will not comment on her attire because, well, that would not be appropriate. Just wow. But she took a question about the Russian elections and whether or not they were free and fair. I never knew that I never knew Sarah Hasselbalch Sandbags to be a gymnast.
Speak to those. Matthew.
Thanks, Sarah. Two more questions on the Putin phone call. First, does the White House believe the election in Russia was free and fair?
I'm sorry?
Does the White House believe that the election in Russia was free and fair?
Look, in terms of the election, we're focused on our elections. We don't get to dictate how other countries operate. What we do know is that Putin has been elected in their country, and that's not something that we can dictate to them how they operate. We can only focus on the freeness and the fairness of our elections, something we 100% fully support.
Now, hold on a damn minute. We comment on the freeness and fairness of elections all the time. There was a comment made during the program last night, recalling the anniversary of the invasion and slaughter of the innocent people of Iraq. You remember the Iraq War, when a million civilians got killed because George W. Bush said, Saddam tried to kill my daddy. Fuck Saddam. We're taking him out. You remember that? Yeah, that cost a million innocent civilians their lives, and they'll probably spend the rest of their days hating the United States, and they'll tell their kids, and they'll hate the United States, and their kids' kids will tell that'll probably go on for about 1,000 generations. Well, back then, we made a big deal out of it, and everybody laughed because, you know, Saddam Hussein got 99% of the vote or some such as that, and it just proved that election was a sham, yes. And then we held our own sham elections for Iraq. And don't you remember the Iraqis all walking around with their purple finger? Remember the purple finger? Yeah, me too. Well, but not Sarah Hasselbalch Sandbags. Oh, hell no. No, all we can say is that they had an election, and it's none of our business whether it was free or fair or whether he was legitimately elected. Because, see, she has to think about this sort of stuff, and thinking is not Sarah Hasselbalch Sandbags' long suit, coming as she does from that, what is it, you went to some weird-ass Bible college in Arkansas, probably got a degree in Sunday school teacher or something like that. Yeah, but see, there's a problem, because if she, as the spokesperson for Donald J. Trump, says that it wasn't a free and fair election in Russia, which of course it wasn't, then maybe we'd be back to talking about whether we had a free and fair election in the United States back in November of 2016, which we didn't. See the opening story of this evening's program. And Kris Kobach, bosom chum of Donald J. Trump and all those millions and millions of illegally cast votes. And all those Massachusettsians who crossed the border and went and voted in the New Hampshire. Oh, yeah. Look, it is not easy being Sarah Hasselbalch's Sandbags. I would imagine that sometimes it's even It's even downright painful. Marty says, Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbag's attire, was it akin to the line, usually one must go to a bowling alley to find a woman of her caliber? Now quit that, Marty! Try to be better here. No, it's the fact that... Oh, see, you're trying to pull me into it and make me do something that I don't want to do. Just damn. Anyway, back. Let's re-examine the clip, shall we? I like the fact that the guy clearly and cogently asks this question. She says, "What? Huh? Oh shit! Not this question."
It was free and fair.
Look, in terms of the election, we're focused on our elections. We don't get to dictate how other countries operate. What we do know is that Putin has been elected in their country, and that's not something that we...
I wonder if... do you notice how she hesitated before she said Putin? Was she catching herself to keep her from saying Daddy Vladdy?
Can dictate to them how they operate. We can only focus on the freeness and the fairness of our election, something we 100% fully support, and something we're going to continue to do everything we can to protect, to make sure bad actors don't have the opportunity to impact them in any way.
And you said election meddling didn't come up in the call. I'm curious, did the recent poisoning in the United Kingdom come up in the call?
I don't believe that was discussed in today's call. John?
No, it was not discussed. It's never discussed. First rule of Russian poisoning is not talk about Russian poisoning. I love that movie. It's where I learned American term snowflake.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. Over the weekend on one of the Sunday morning shows, Trey Gowdy, Republican of South Carolina, said when responding to the various tweets that...
Oh, well, and we're off and running on another topic now. Yes. So, that had to be uncomfortable, because if you look at the larger history of the United States, we've been having a hard time having free and fair elections of our own for a while now, going all the way back to 2000 and the Hanging Chads and 2004, and lo and behold, people who knew about election rigging in Ohio, suddenly dying in small plane crashes, and in point of fact, there's an argument to be made that there was voter suppression and voter finagling even when Barack Obama was elected, that the totals may have actually been higher. Yeah, no kidding. And then, of course, 2016. Yeah, oops. And this is breaking news. This just came across the AP wire. And this is all I have. Austin authorities say they are responding to another reported explosion that injured at least one person. One of the more cogent observations that I saw made earlier today was a former ATF special agent who said, now that we've had one of these explode at a processing facility, that means there may very well be other ones in the pipeline. Well, at least we know it's not a terrorist. And the phrase was actually used, we don't want to jump to any conclusions on that. How is that a jump? Why else do you put bombs in the stream of commerce with the intent to kill people. And the said special agent I saw earlier today said, well, he's enjoying displaying, and he didn't hesitate to use the masculine pronoun, he's enjoying displaying his prowess in construction and fusing, as if this was some sort of science fair experiment gone bad. Yeah, Silent R. Lamar says Unabomber, Bob, but no, again, this doesn't strike me as the Unabomber. In light of the fact that the first victims were people of color and were delivered to specific addresses, this feels an awful lot more like 1963 and Birmingham, as I said. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Sarah Hasselbuck Sandbags is better half. The linked photos show that some people don't care about physical appearance. This is Mr. Sandbags. Either that or... God. You know what? Y'all are just troublemakers. Outside agitators. Poor fella. Yeah, thank you. Silent R. Lamar says, I agree. Yes, 1963. By the way, just had a note. We got about 29 minutes left in the program. I had a note from Silent R. Lamar. If you can get half of tonight's funding, I'll make up the rest for tonight. That is a huge offer. So, oh dear God, ciphering, 390, that's 150 is half of 300. 195, actually 180, because Charlene got us started a few minutes ago at $15. So 180, if we can raise 180 bucks, 10 at 18, 18 at 10, in the next 28 minutes, and it would have been, I would have far rather had done with fundraising hours ago, but or an hour and a half ago. Okay, 2 hours ago. But if we can raise 180 bucks, and Silent R. Lamar will put forward the other 195, and we won't have a giant G. Willikers Hole as of, you know, tomorrow evening for prayer meeting Wednesday. That's a huge, huge offer. Let's check in with Silent R. Lamar and see if he wants to elaborate on that. Here we go. Hey, Lamar. Yo, Lamar. Lamar, you got to turn your radio down, buddy.
I turned it off.
Ah, that's even better. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm glad you picked up. You know, the way I feel about it, everything, I would be happy to just even make the payment if nobody else makes an effort.
Well, I'd hate for you to have to carry a burden like that, but if...
Brother, I call you my brother. You know I talk to you. You got my phone number. I have come through before. Last time you were dying for $700, I pulled it out for you.
You did. You've been a tremendous help, and I thank you.
I'm the angry architect that I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'm really called about is, you know, we as Americans need to wake up. There's no color barrier. We're all being screwed, and until we wake up and realize that, we're going to continue to be screwed. Because the way we're going right now, I won't be able to help you. the way they're coming after me. Remember when I made the joke I would like to use as a write-off?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was, in a way, I was joking, but I was serious. I can play their game. I was brought up in white-collar America. I was in white-collar America before Reagan and his trickle-down theory and shit trickling down. And these people are talking about, Ryan and them are talking about, we got to deal with the, what do you call it, entitlement? Excuse me.
Yeah, the entitlements that allowed him to live a halfway decent life after his daddy died.
Yes, but see, the point, what I'm sitting here tripping off of, America, wake up, go back to school, get some books, read something. You're entitled to what you put in. You're not entitled to nothing you put in.
Yeah.
So if
Social Security, Medicare, all these things that Republicans despise, they despise it because they want the money. We forget that it's a longstanding tenet of this program. They want it all. And, you know, back in the Reagan days when they started the move toward forcing people to get into the market with their pension, instead of having regular pensions, they wanted that, and they got
it. Okay, I'm going to put you this way. Brother Bob, I was born in 58. I've been politically involved because my educators told me to be a happy life,
Something happened to your phone there, Lamar. I need to get the mouthpiece back close to you.
Okay, I'll step outside. I walk out my office. I get into the good range of the. Is this better?
Oh yeah, that's perfect. You're golden now.
Oh, I stepped outside. I'm out of my office, my home office. I had to relocate 4 times since we've been chatting.
Oh,
because I'm fighting the Republican Fruit Loop Party.
Well, it sounds like you've got the high quality cell coverage that we've got here in the hills.
Well, your Frontier stuff, I just get a big laugh out because I got Frontier not far from me. If I were to move in about a mile and a half to my east, I'll have Frontier, and then we could both be singing that sorry song.
Well, you know what? the service is horrible, but their workers are their field workers are great, and I'm fully supportive of the efforts of the Communication Workers of America in this, because they've never been the problem.
Well, the problem is labor is the backbone of America. And until the people who provide labor, you got people who provide labor and don't even think they give out labor. Labor is when you get your ass up at 7 o'clock in the morning, travel 9 miles to the east of your house, and you put in 8 hours with some heifer talking crazy to you, and you come back home. That's labor.
Right. I've always subscribed, Lamar, to the notion that labor is if you get a check for what you do, and your name is not the name that's signed at the bottom of the check, you're a worker. If you're a worker, you're engaged in labor. There's a great, I don't know if you've ever seen it. If you haven't, I recommend it. But the John Sayles movie, it's West Virginia specific, called Mate One. There's a line in there where the organizer says, there's thems that work and them that don't. They don't,
I've heard that,
we do.
I've heard that. See, this is why I like the idea. We get the people who are in labor. If we were to stand up like our forefathers, like I just had a brain fart. Oh, Sojourner Truth. Back in the day, Mother Jones. Mother Jones is an even better person. Go back to, you know what? If you want us to do something, then pay us. Because if everybody in labor were to walk off, we will put a hell of a break on that cog in the wheel.
Oh, yeah. There's a reason that after the National Labor Relations Act was passed under the FDR administration, that once the Republicans got hold of the Congress again, Lo and behold, we get the Taft Hartley Act, which basically criminalized the strongest the strongest tool that the union had, and that was wildcat strikes and calls for general strikes.
Well,
see,
you
the,
know,
in a country like in a country like France, if the bus drivers get pissed off and the bus drivers union feels like they're getting screwed, the teachers walk out, the judges walk out, the airplane mechanics walk out, the train conductors walk out, everything stops until the problem gets solved.
Well, the problem is this. We had the same solidarity before Reagan got in. And when Reagan sit there and fired all the air traffic controllers and put goobers involved and we start having air collisions and all this other stuff, nobody talked about it until we, the labor people, started feeling sorry and felt that we need to protect our fellow Americans. See, here's the problem that we have, Bob. I'm going to put it up front. We used to be the country, when I was born, we were Americans first, your political party second, and your religion was between you and your deity. We're not there anymore. We're not.
No, we're not. We're not. Absolutely.
You listen to the people. And see, what I get a real kick out of, you have the talking head, especially on the Republican side, talking like, okay, maybe we need to go back to being Americans first. I don't hear that. You ain't been American since Reagan. Your trickle-down is piss on me, okay? Simple. And I've had people where I've shown the demonstration. Here's a piece of, here's a 2x4. I got it in a 45-degree angle, and I'm pouring water on it. How much water gets to the bottom?
Not,
and everybody says, "There you go."
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, the bucket, the bottom of the bucket don't get wet.
Thank you. And I'm so proud of your teachers in your area finally saying enough is a fucking enough.
Yeah, I am too. I am too, and I want that momentum to carry forward. Because the worst part of it all is that a 5% raise didn't fix the problem.
The 5% raise, I'm looking at a longer game. If the teachers in California can get with the teachers throughout the United States as well as New York, we can push these bitches back into order. Right now, Trump is talking shit and coming after our union. Teachers union in California is not going nowhere. I don't give a shit what you say.
There's enough of them that you wield a significant amount of political force. I mean, you know how many teachers were on strike in West Virginia? And I mean, all the teachers went out, but you know how many all the teachers in West Virginia were?
I would say if you have a good number, I would say over 3,000.
20,000. It was 20,000.
Okay, 20,000, because I know what they've done to us. By state law and educational rule, we should not have more than 20 students in the classroom. If I got 30 or 40 kids in my classroom, I am inhibited of doing my job. Okay, guess what? Johnny and Sarah and Bob don't want to do no work today because they had a bad night. Who am I going to send them to? Nobody. I got to deal with them. I don't give a shit how many hours you give me. They're going to act up the whole period they're in my class because they're having their mindset that that's what they're going to do. And guess who kids lose? Everybody else's kids, because I got to deal with Billy and Bobby and Sarah.
Right. Yeah.
It's unfair. And see, I've been a school teacher since 1984. So I've done my time.
You have earned your harp, your halo, and your wings, Lamar.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm hoping McCabe. I was telling my coworker, I hope McCabe goes after Trump's punk ass to fuck over a person who's just about to retire All he has is 2 hours and he gets full benefit, and Trump would not give him that. That would tell me, as a person looking at the Republican Party, fuck them, because they're going to fuck me. No way in hell you take away a man's livelihood. He's put in, I don't care how many hours, you weren't even president. You were a cripple in somebody's dream, and you're going to take this man's career and everything away from him? This is why I sent you that message stating, well, if my message was good, I wouldn't have to keep people from voting for me.
There we go.
The Republicans are sick. They're sick. And they keep putting more sick and deranged individuals in front of us. And it's a sad day in America.
Well, it's a sad day. It's been a sad year. And everybody's just sitting back and holding their breath and hoping we can get this blue wave in November. And nobody wants it more than I do.
You know, I'm like this, Bob. I want the blue wave. I'm pushing for the blue wave. But you know what? I was born in 58, like I told you. There is a deep state. I'm waiting for them to piss. I'm waiting for Trump and the Republicans to piss them off to the point where they assassinate him like they did Kennedy.
Well,
I'm talking real.
Well, I don't even want to countenance that, Lamar, simply because if that were to happen, they killed Kennedy, whoever they are. And since Kennedy was a Democrat, people more or less sat back and said, well, let's not jump to conclusions.
Well, they shot Lincoln. He was a Republican.
But if something other than natural processes were to happen to Geezer Disgustus, the hard cases, the dead enders, the maggots and trumpanzees, would go out of their tiny little minds, and they got lots of guns.
Well, they got lots of guns, but they don't. They got lots of guns, but when the other people who don't have lots of guns start getting guns, like I said, I live in California. I'm a black man. Ronald Reagan was all for guns and shooting shit up. White people have a gun. When the Black Panthers walked up to Sacramento and said, "Hi there, we're black and we got guns. We got gun control in California." If we want guns, see, the only reason why minorities don't want guns, because we don't want to be dead.
Well, again, precisely my point. That's why I brought up Carl catching with a butterfly net in Kentucky. If that had been a black man,
He'd been plastered. He'd been plastered.
I mean, they'd still be picking up pieces of him.
No, when they came out there with they came out with a wet vac and sucked them all up. I'm being gross, but sorry. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Well, I tell you what, Lamar, your challenge is beginning to work. We're down to only $100 to go and 12 minutes to go in the program. So I thank you very much for making that challenge, and I appreciate the call.
You know what? I'm like this. I love you like a brother. If they don't make it, you got... You and I have a life preserver. I'll send you the line, okay?
All right, but I would rather you didn't have to, so hopefully folks will
Well, I want your voice on the airwaves more than I need mine.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your voice with us this evening, Lamar. You have yourself a good evening now.
You too, dude.
All right, later. The one and only Silent R. Lamar calling from California. My God, teach school since 1984? Whoo! No, it's hard damn work. I mean, I talk about my dad a lot working on the furnace and in coal mines and stuff. Look, you don't have to come home covered in soot and filth every day to have a hard job. Mm-mm. No, I just think back to the obnoxious little teenager that I was. And there were a lot of people that were far more obnoxious than me. And I had teachers who somehow managed to not get themselves put in prison dealing with us. I think about the Finns who pay teachers on a scale that is comparable to the most important professionals in their society. Can you imagine what a Republican would say if we suggested that teachers, well, that education should be funded on a level such that we could pay teachers, say, $125,000 a year? Yeah. Just ponder what could come out of that. A couple of notes. Ron and Raleigh's just hell-bent on getting me in trouble. Subject line, imagine, and I don't think he's talking about the John Lennon song. Hey, Bob, imagine rolling over in the morning to face Sarah Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags before she gets her face on. Enough to make a freight train take a dirt road. Now, quit that, Ron. She's a, and this is a turn, she's a handsome woman. Isn't that the phrase we use? Meanwhile, piling on, Matt in San Francisco, subject line, when I see Sarah on TV, she reminds me of a piece of art. A Picasso painting, but it's still art. You guys are rough. I know. I know. Damn it! You people! Brian jumps in. If you can't make a statement about her attire, why not what she's adorned with? Her dress looks like a hanging chad. We're not supposed to do that anymore. But freight train take a dirt road, I'm familiar with that phrase. Looks like a million, green and wrinkled. Stop it, stop it, stop it. So anyway, thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, and thank you to Glenn, and from and thank you very, very kindly to David, another member of the Fraternity of David. And thank you very much to Sheila, with a note from Sheila. I enjoy your company. Well, I enjoy hanging out with you guys. I really, really do. About 8 minutes before the hour. Let's jump in. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob.
Before we jump into whatever you're bringing to the table, I got one of those Titanic moments. Just one more to wrap up the program, okay?
Okay.
So we know that Don Jr. is getting himself a D-I-V-O-R-C-E, right? You remember the song?
D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
I knew there'd be singing. Yes. So the Business Insider is reporting, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess and a real and a real Lulu.
She's never done me wrong.
Well, that
she's confused the hell out of me, but she's never done me wrong.
Back when Don Jr. was a rompin', yeah, with a singer by the name of Aubrey O'Day, at the same time that he was married with his traditional family values, Christian, marriage wife. His daddy went to him and said, now I want you, Donnie, cut it out. Stop cheating on your wife while she's pregnant.
Hello, Pot, this is Kettle. Yeah.
Pot, this is Pot calling Kettle. Pot calling Kettle. Kettle, do you read? Come in, Kettle. Because of course, he was a rompin' with Stormy Daniels you know, pretty much contemporaneous with the birth of his last child. Just kind of had to had to get that out there. And well, and see, he and see, that's the thing. Don Jr. got busted by his wife in flagrante delicto. That means she found his emails to her.
Oh, that's always a delight.
Yeah, by the way, Jason is getting in on the action regarding Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags. Jason says, responding to Matt's note, Picasso, more like Rubens. Plus,
yeah,
I try to get this community to behave itself, and you know, I might as well be howling into a gale force wind.
You know, though, in fairness to Sarah, I'd love to see her smile. I mean, a genuine light up the room kind of smile.
You old DJ, you. Sarah, smile? Really? You're going to do that?
No, seriously, because a smile will tell you a lot about a person. Okay? But
well, I've seen her smile, and when she smiles, she looks like she has gas.
No, no, I don't mean a wicked smile. I mean a genuine light up the room. Kind of my heart's in the right place.
So do I, and it just looks like a big bubble of farts passing through her.
She'd have to quit her job.
You know, because she can't get all the way to, I mean, that's what Christianity does for you, her brand. It makes you like that.
Yeah, you get, what did they say about Calvin Coolidge? I think Alice Roosevelt Longworth put it perfectly about Calvin Coolidge. He looks like he was weaned on a pickle. So there you go. But in fairness to Sarah, as much as I can muster up some Christian charity, I like ample women. I personally do. I thought Mama Cass was hot in her own way. And maybe that's just me.
You apparently pushed the wrong button. This is not that radio program.
Okay, well, anyway.
It's on a little later.
Okay, as I see the old clock on the wall, let me just jump to what I was calling about. But last night, this comes under the heading of a video viewing tip for all the fun lovers and truth seekers. And I think Silent Lamar would enjoy this too if he hasn't already seen it. I happened upon it last night. I'd heard about it years ago, but only last night happened upon it on YouTube. The entire 1 hour, 36 minute, 1964 documentary, Point of Order. And I recommend it to anybody because it proves something that I've been saying for a while. In terms of Trump and some of these other bozos, we've seen this sort of thing before. And what the documentary Point of Order had to do with was the 1954 Army McCarthy hearings, headed up by Senator Joseph McCarthy, Republican of Wisconsin, who gave us the Red Scare, or at least contributed to it. Okay, and it was when he was beginning to hit the skids, when people were beginning to catch on to him. And it was basically his investigation of alleged communist infiltration in the Army, at the Pentagon and other places, and in the defense industry. And the documentary basically takes footage from those hearings, which aired live on television. In fairness, what you need to do, if you're not familiar with the hearings or the film, check out the Wikipedia entry for Point of Order, and then pour yourself something to drink, sit down, kick up your feet, and watch Point of Order, because I heard echoes of Trump and some of these others in general. Verbiage and stuff like that. And it will definitely not be a waste of someone's time to spend the hour and a half to watch that thing. And if you haven't seen it, I recommend it.
Okay.
because it's.
Well, I've got a lot of I got a lot of solo viewing time these days because the boss is over there helping with our daughter. So I'm working on a list.
To answer the question you haven't asked yet, but invariably will, not yet. But I will.
Okay, now you're jumping out in front of it, and that's not within. No, that's not part of the bit. I have to ask, and you have to answer. It's no fun if you try to cut me off at the pass.
Okay, all right. Well, go ahead.
So, gotten started on Squidbillies yet, Scott?
Not yet, but I will, Bob.
Okay, so see, that's how that works.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm glad you have clarified that for me. The you raised a point of order there, and I commend you for it, Senator. My esteemed colleague.
Wash your mouth out, mister.
All right. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go because the show's over, and I'm right behind it. I'm damn near finished myself.
We're all screwed.
We're all screwed, Bob.
Later, Scott.
See ya.
Bye. And we're making real progress. Remember, if we can raise $100, Silent R. Lamar will kick in the other $195, and we won't have anything but our regular fundraising to go for the rest of the week. And we've got a fighting chance to have an actual full 5-day week of fundraising free radio. And isn't that exciting? So I want to follow up just a little bit. Carol Baker messaged me a few minutes ago about the latest word of another bomb going off in Austin. In trying to use the word terrorist, you know, as I said, the authorities said, now let's not jump to any conclusions. Sister Carol said, no, let's jump to conclusions, because it's not a big jump. It's terrorism. Just because dude hasn't issued a list of demands doesn't mean it isn't terrorism. And the one this morning exploded at a FedEx facility. This latest one this evening was discovered, or was delivered and discovered. The two bombs today have, according to the ATF and the FBI and Austin police, are all in agreement that all of these bombs are connected. They are the work of a single person. We haven't gotten to the copycatting phase of the process yet. One person has been injured potentially seriously in this most recent blast this evening. The man was in his 30s. Emergent EMS is saying that his injuries are potentially serious. It's a very horrifying and nervous time in Austin right now. FedEx spokesman Jim McCluskey says that the company has provided extensive evidence related to these packages and the individual that shipped them, collected from the advanced technology security systems, that's all been turned over to the authorities. But as I look at this and I say, well, you know, the FBI and the ATF and the Austin police all agree they're all connected, yada, yada, yada. That's not hard to comprehend, is it? That these agencies are working together, that they're all looking at the evidence and they're coming to the same conclusion. Well, take a minute then, and look at another matter, where a whole bunch of law enforcement and intelligence agencies agree that the Russians monkeyed with our election in 2016. and you've got, and yet you've got people out there making bank. On saying, it didn't happen. Vlad Putiput is a wonderful man. And you've all been ponerized for believing that sweet, lovable Mother Russia would ever do anything so ungenteel. How do you get to that without the information itself having been manipulated in advance? Consider, and of course, you know, I say Washington Post and the deniers out there. Oh, CIA, Jeff Bezos, blah, blah, blah. You know, the same way Trump talks. But the Washington Post has reported that, for all intents and purposes, Steve Bannon was Cambridge Analytica. And if you go and you have a look, I retweeted it earlier this evening. If you go and have a look at my Twitter timeline, you'll see a tweet thread from Matt Osborne. And he went to great pains to explain some of this Cambridge Analytica stuff. He starts out asking, why was Cambridge Analytica testing Trump slogans in 2014? Because they are actually Steve Bannon economic nationalism slogans. Whistleblower Chris Wiley says that Bannon, who was part of the origins of Cambridge Analytica, quote, was deeply involved in the company's strategy and approved spending nearly $1 million to acquire data, including Facebook profiles, in 2014. And Bannon and Rebecca Mercer, Robert and Rebecca Mercer being the primary money source behind Cambridge Analytica, were involved in conference calls around 2014 when they talked about their plan that far back to harvest data from Facebook. Chris Wiley went on to tell the Washington Post that Bannon approved the data collection scheme we were proposing. It wasn't data collection, it was a data heist. Eventually, Breitbart would be paid over $125,000 in consulting fees from Cambridge Analytica. He also got an ownership stake in the country that was in the company that was somewhere between $1 million and $5 million. That's not chump change. So then, compare that with this little list. Sums paid to Cambridge Analytica from June 2014 to December 2016. Donald J. Trump for President, Inc., $5,912,500. Cruz for President, $5,805,552. Make America Number One, $1,476,484. John Bolton Super PAC, $1,152,300. Keep the Promise Two, $570,000. Carson America. I mean, you know, Ben's faith in God goes only so far. Carson America, $438,065. North Carolina Republican Party, $215,000. Jobs Growth and Freedom Fund, $133,333. FOM Tillis Committee of North Carolina, $130,000. Restoring America Leadership PAC, $117,000. Restore American Leadership, $38,625. Art Robinson for Congress, $20,000. Walters for Congress, $20,000. Dr. Monica Wabe for U.S. Senate, $20,000. Cotton for Senate, that's Tom out in Arkansas, $20,000, cheapskate. McHenry for Congress, $15,000. Friends of Roy Blunt, Missouri, $12,000. Rick Kozel for Congress, $5,211, for a grand total of $16,101,170. From 2014 going forward. Now, those are all Republican operations. Those are all hardcore conservative operations. And if you go to the at Osborne Inc., Osborneink, thread that I retweeted, you will find, as you go down there, he says, so Christopher Wiley was testing out slogans in 2014 that Steve Bannon wanted to put in the mouth of a Republican nominee in 2016. By 2015, Bannon was focused on two candidates, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. By 2016, it was plain as day on his website. The 2016 Breitbart primary, Cruz, Trump. And that appears on the Breitbart website in 2015. We got had. This was a total scam. And it was run through a combination of Russian money, Russian oligarchs, Russian trolling, plus Steve Bannon and Cambridge Analytica. And it created a perfect storm for a near perfect, bloodless, as they call it, coup. I felt like we needed to get that out there this evening before I wrapped up. And again, terribly sorry about being late to the microphone. There's just a little bit of chaos going around here these days, and I reckon it's going to mess with me from time to time, but sorry. Robert in Australia asks the trenchant question, is trying to swing an election in this fashion considered treason? Well, treason is the only crime that is defined within the Constitution of the United States, and it is defined as giving aid and comfort to the enemy. I mean, that's the primary gravamen of the offense. There are some there's some wiggle room to it. You'll find it in Article 3 of the Constitution of the United States. In Section 3, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or in confession or on confession in open court. The framers were more than a little nervous about treason, because in their understanding of European history, treason had popped up as a reason to just get rid of one's political enemies. And especially in the history of merry old England, with things like the Court of Star Chamber and ex post facto laws, they wanted to be very careful with the concept. But here's where it gets a little hinky. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them. Once again, we're sort of at sea between the late 18th century and the second decade of the 21st. Now, if you're one of the adherents of the alleged, and it's just mainly baloney, philosophy of fat dead Tony Scalia, you say that levying war against the United States would have to involve shooting guns and armies and people wearing red coats and saying words like huzzah a lot. Maybe some hired Hessian mercenaries here and there. But that, you know, that's war against the United States. But in the 21st century, as has been remarked, war can be carried out electronically, with never the first bullet emerging from the muzzle of a gun. If you can, at the push of a button, shut down the energy supply of vast swaths of a nation, even the United Nations recognizes that that is an act of war. That shutting down people's ability to have the necessities of life is an act of war. So the question is, if you act in such a way as to benefit an adversary of the United States, are you giving them aid and comfort? When you think about this question, just remember how your average garden variety white winger will begin to froth and foam at the mouth and jump up and down and spit and scream and howl and curse at the mere mention of the name of Jane Fonda. They seem to have no problem screaming that that was treason, and yet participating in the corruption of our elections isn't. On the other hand, there's that the question of the word, and this is why we have a Supreme Court. This is why we are supposed to have a court with wise people on it, who can suss out these differences. There's that question of adhering to their enemies. Must one be in a declared war against someone for that country to be an enemy? Is enemies the same thing as political adversaries? May one have an enemy with whom one is not at war? I do not know, but I suspect the answer would be no. But even to answer in short, after a lot of talk, to answer Robert Nostrelia's question, even if it's not treason, it can damned well be something else. One of the things it can be is espionage. And to the extent that there is clear evidence of a conspiracy and of overt acts in furtherance of that conspiracy, the conspiracy itself being the conspiracy to harvest, if you believe the Facebook corporate leadership, without their knowledge, the data of 50 million people, and to use that data to micro-target your political message? Well, that's not political speech. That's espionage. That is corporate espionage. And it is arguably criminal conduct. Arguably. Because in the law, there's always an argument. Where did Drain the Swamp come from? Well, Chris Wiley, who should know, says that that was a tested slogan. So too was the phrase deep state. These slogans were tested as far back as 2014. They knew what they were doing. And in a conspiracy like this, with the added benefit of the Russian security services and their troll farms, it was like taking candy from a baby. It was a coup. It was a coup for the purpose of destroying civil society and civil governance in the United States so that authoritarianism could hold sway, and so that people's belief, and I know what I'm, and I know how dangerous that word is, but it applies here, and so that people's belief in semi-democratic processes would be destroyed. And the world would be made safer for Putin. I mean, look at it. That clip of Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags. Listen to it. We can't even point out a sham election when it's right in front of our faces. That should say something. But again, people will make bank, are making bank, on cynically arguing the contrary. So take that as you will. I'll go ahead and knock off now. I just wanted to make up for a little bit of the time that we lost because of my difficulties getting to the mic this evening. Thank you one and all to those of you who helped bring down the fundraising deficit a little bit. We brought it down to, if Silent R. Lamar's challenge is met, we can get to zero if there are just a few more people who will kick in the grand total of $100. 20 people at $5. 10 people at $10. Okay? So, there we are. Please don't let Silent R. Lamar's challenge go by the boards. Thanks to all of you who do keep the program on the air. Thank you very kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time in this process, this little conversation, however it is you participate, your emails, your tweets, your Facebook posts, your likes, your messages over on Skype, your calls. Thank you. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for HeadOn.live. We would be dead in the water right now without that. Thank you to John Fox in Australia, desperately trying to find out what the is wrong with what happened to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website. Thank you, John. This is all volunteer efforts. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.